All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Thursday, December 16th. I am Doug Norrie, that is
James Davis.
And we are going to be breaking down some value plays that you can take a look at for this week, week 15 in the NFL. We're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, or DFSR.com for short. Here to help you build lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings NFL. We have a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab, which helps you calculate the optimal lineups for those two sites. And you can check it out for 3 days and then $29.95 a month after that. And along those lines, at the end of today's show, after James and I are done discussing our value play articles, I jump on the line with DFSR user Andrew Morris, who won
World famous Andrew Morris.
Yeah, no kidding. Who won the DraftKings Millionaire this past week with a single entry using the DFSR, using those aforementioned DFSR Pro tools. So please go check that out. You will not be disappointed. It's always hard. I know in DFS culture, sometimes it's hard to not win. You want to be the guy that won. Let me assure you that if you didn't win, you'll be glad Andrew did. He's about the nicest guy you could talk to in DFS. So go check that out. That's at the end of the podcast. All right, buddy, we are going to take a look at a week. Today we're going to break down some of our value plays. We released that article on Tuesday, and tomorrow we'll be going through a game-by-game breakdown of every game on the NFL slate and talking about the DFS implications that come along with each one of those games. In overall, just a broad view of this week compared to maybe other weeks when it came to us like sort of picking who we were going to write up as our early week value plays.
I'd say overall it was, not super, super difficult, but it was just different. Like, I mean, in the past several weeks, there haven't been any punt running backs, for instance. This week, there are a couple of good ones that we can consider. In the past few weeks, like, wide receiver has had a lot of great value plays, and this week those are a little bit less certain, or the price has gone up on some of the established value guys. So, yeah, a little trickier. Some good plays in bad matchups, things like that. But overall, it's another week.
Yeah, I felt that there was almost just, like, I would fall into, like, the too many camp. I think this week, the overall problem people are going to have this week is not a problem of finding value. It's which value to play, basically. Like, I think that this week, more than other weeks, everyone's going to be able to put together, I think, lineups they like, especially mostly because of the running backs, but you're also going to be left without players you really are going to feel uncomfortable about not playing, so if that makes sense. So I think that to me, at least right now, this is Thursday morning, 9 o'clock Eastern, that to me is sort of the theme going into this week. Let's take a look at quarterback. We wrote up four players. The first one, and I think he's topped this list, I don't know, something like 7 of the last 8 weeks or something like that for us, is Aaron Rodgers. He played Seattle last week. It didn't seem to be an issue. He was incredibly efficient, even in a bad weather matchup and a bad, bad overall defensive matchup, Seattle being a top 5 or 6 defense on the season. Do we like Rodgers against Chicago as just kind of like the highest floor guy once again going into this week?
Yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, he rolled out the 21-point passing performance in just 23 pass attempts against Seattle and got the 3 touchdowns, of course. He still is the chief option down as they get close to the red zone. So, I mean, they see it as a -6.5 game, Vegas, that is. And so, well, I don't think that is terrible or anything. I guess there's a little bit of blowout risk here. They still don't really have a terrific running game. And Rodgers is just going to keep rolling out 20-point performances as far as I can tell.
Yeah, the only thing that concerns me a little bit with him is that they were a little more willing to run the ball last week. I mean, now, again, it's a little difficult sometimes, chicken or the egg. They were winning by so much, they just didn't.
Yeah, they won by 28 points.
Right, they just didn't need to do anything else. With Christian Michael and Ty Montgomery sort of both back there, healthy, Michael knowing the playbook theoretically a little better now, I'm not sure if they look to establish the run a little more, mostly just to save Rodgers, to just have a more balanced attack. Up until this point, they were just content to sort of have him drop back, run around, scramble around a lot, find a guy in like sort of that breakdown pattern, and kind of just throw the ball 50 times. I don't think they need to do that anymore as much, and that's the only thing I think that bites in a little bit to his overall upside, maybe, but all that being said, he just is the highest floor guy. He just does everything. He's become more efficient in passing since the beginning of the year. He runs a ton still. So he's for me the highest floor cash game play. It's going to be a little tricky to decide if we can get his salary in as compared to some of these other guys. But he starts the list of guys I don't want to not play, if that makes sense. That's kind of my theme.
A lot of only negative. A little bit,
a lot of double negatives in there. But all right, after him, Oh, I know people didn't want to see this name, but it was Carson Palmer. Palmer coming off a week, about as bad of a week as you can have a quarterback last week. He really struggled. A lot of it was weather-induced that because there was just a torrential monsoon going on in Miami for that game. No one could really – it looked difficult to even hold the ball. Palmer, it's one of these funny things. I know people saw this on the list, and they were just like, Palmer, no, because they just don't like see a bad week. They don't want to play a guy. I think that people just don't like him in general, like just playing him in general because he's just kind of up and down. Why do we like Palmer this week?
Well, it's primarily the matchup. I mean, New Orleans this season at 7.8 yards per attempt allowed is the second worst in the NFL in that regard. And he's kind of cheap. He's just 7,600 on FanDuel. He's not an electric upside guy necessarily. He hasn't topped 25 fantasy points this season, but he's been in that 24 range a handful of times, especially in good matchups. And he really has that this week. And so while the player in a vacuum is not a fantastic quarterback, I do think that the matchup plus the price makes it just one of those situations where it just frees up so many other aspects around your lineup. Now, I don't know if this is actually the week where you really need the savings necessarily, because there's some excellent savings at running back that we'll get to in a second, and frankly, plenty of value at wide receiver. But yeah, I could see certainly him fitting into big tournament lineups if you wanted to pair him with like Larry Fitzgerald or maybe even David Johnson. It's not a play I can say I'm super enthusiastic to endorse, but I totally understand why the system is seeing it.
Yeah, we have him as right now the third or fourth overall points guy, which probably is a little bit high. But some of these other quarterbacks...
I don't know, they have the third highest team total.
Well, right. I was going to say, because the other problem is some of these other quarterbacks that fall below him are just not in great matchups. And so, you got Luck against Minnesota, Stafford against a pretty slow Giants team that's been pretty decent on defense, all things considered. And you get guys like Cam, who you just simply can't trust. So not to just go down and rifle down this whole list. Brady plays Denver. Some of these other guys. And where Palmer's also really interesting is DraftKings, where he's only 6,000. I mean, this is really getting pretty cheap for a quarterback. Right when you get to that top of, upper fives, really low sixes in terms of salary, that's really just nothing to pay for him on DraftKings. And If you think that the matchup is great, if you think the price is depressed coming off a bad week a little bit, and like you said, their team total is about as high as it can get, it's going to be weird. I think I'm going to end up doing it in cash games. The system's certainly going to have trouble pivoting away from him because of the matchup. So it'll be interesting. After him, we get back into maybe a little bit more of a safer guy in terms of just overall team and just season, and that's Matt Ryan. Is Ryan here? Is this more about Matt Ryan, you think, or is it more about that Matt Ryan's playing the 49ers this week?
It's a combination of both. I mean, part of it is that the Falcons do rely on the pass and even the short pass to guys like Freeman and Coleman to move the chains and when they get down in the red zone. So Ryan actually does offer a decent amount of upside in that regard, like as opposed to a team that just pounds the ball once they get inside the 10, like the Cowboys or something like that. So I do think Ryan has his own merits as a player, but again, this really does come to the matchup. San Francisco this season ranking 28th in DVOA against the pass. Julio Jones looks to be playing this week, so I think Ryan just looks like a terrific play. If Julio doesn't play for whatever reason and he's got to rely more on Taylor Gabriel, maybe you're paying too much of a premium for a guy like, just strictly by the numbers. Ryan doesn't check all the boxes necessarily from week to week, like in that he's not quite as good as Rodgers, but the upside's been there earlier this season. He has a 37 fantasy point game on his resume, 28 fantasy point game, 29 fantasy point game. So, yeah, I think the upside's there. The efficiency is there, too. Like, 30 passes against 7 interceptions, very solid completion percentage. He's just a good, solid quarterback.
Yeah, the Falcons have a crazy, 33 implied total right now, which I'm pretty sure that's the highest I've seen this year. I can't remember if there was, a Patriot game when Brady came back early that they were sort of in that range, but I don't think we've seen another team with an implied total up near 33 this whole season. So it really speaks to A, how bad the 49er defense is, and B, that the Falcons just have a quick strike offense, like you mentioned. And, they're coming off a week where they put up a lot of points. Now, some of that was thanks to two defensive touchdowns. So a little inflated coming. The overall performance against the Rams, a little bit inflated because of those two defensive touchdowns. But, yeah, I really like Ryan, and it's mostly just because we just want to target players against the bad defenses. Speaking of players against bad defenses, Tyrod Taylor plays the Browns this week. The Bills have a 26 implied total, which I'm sure is their highest this season without looking back through the record book right now. But I cannot imagine another week where the Bills had 26 were favored for 26 points. Although I think there was one week they did play the 49ers. But do we like Taylor's price? I mean, a little bit more on DraftKings where he's only 5,700, which is, again, getting really down into that cheap punt play sort of price for quarterbacks. Do you think it's worth it for him considering the matchup against against the Browns?
I think it is if you're targeting him for big tournaments. I mean, the thing about Taylor that you're hoping for, living the dream with Taylor, looks like he just randomly goes out there and is like three quarters of a quarterback and a full running back in a given game. And given how bad Cleveland's been this season, I mean, they're just terrible on all facets of the ball, 31st in DVOA against the pass, 29th against the run. You know, again, they check all the boxes in terms of just the ideal matchup. And Taylor, yeah, he'll disappear on you from week to week. Like, there's certainly a chance that we just see a ton of LeSean McCoy here. So I can't really endorse just putting him in your cash game lineups and just hoping for the best. But in terms of just overall upside, and especially on a points per dollar basis, Taylor does have 30 fantasy point upside, which is just pretty uncommon for a guy in his price range.
All right, let's move on to running backs, where we have, I think, basically a stars and scrubs approach to this week coming in. It was what it looks like, which hasn't really been the case, or we've maybe thought it was going to be the case at times with running back, and it hasn't panned out. This week, of all weeks where I think we can take a strong, very strong, and feel comfortable look at cheap running backs, I think this is the one. With Melvin Gordon out, Kenneth Farrow did take over a majority of the carries last week for San Diego. They struggled on offense. You know, Gordon's funny because, well, it's not funny, but Gordon is interesting in that he was just their whole running game. Like, they played him basically every down. And to lose that guy creates a pretty big vacuum for your offense. Do you think Farrow is the guy that scoops up all the opportunity here? Do they go more of like a running back by committee approach? Do you think Farrow's safe for cash games? I guess I just want your thoughts on Farrow. I could have done without all the lead, and I suppose.
Oh, I'd be happy to share my thoughts on Farrow. I'm so glad you asked, okay? Yeah, the answer is yes. I'll give you my thoughts. So you don't need to be nervous about asking me. So with Farrow, I'm all at once encouraged by what happened last week, and just want to offer just a little bit of a word of caution too. So the first thing you're encouraged by, of course, is when Gordon goes down, Farrow assumes all the whole entire load. No one else got a single carry except for Travis Benjamin, who, you know, is a wide receiver and is not going to slot into the role. And not only that, he had six receptions, and all of this in a game that San Diego was out of completely, right? So that indicates to me that, you know, San Diego still feels like they need to run the ball even when they're down by quite a bit, and that they're going to continue this short passing is also kind of a running game approach as well. So all that's very good. The only thing I'd like to caution people on is we frequently see teams be understaffed for kind of a season-ending injury like this, and that is going to commonly happen when so a guy goes down and then they look around and they're like, oh geez, Farrow's the only other guy who like really even has a helmet on this week. Like, right. Everyone else is in street clothes. So I suspect that they'll find someone else. I'll plug them in.
Ronnie Hillman is the guy that they're talking about possibly having a platoon approach with right now.
Right. Yeah. So, and that to me is definitely somewhat of a red flag, and especially at 6,000, like, he's cheap, but he's not the cheapest possible that he can be. So I guess all this to say, it's a terrific matchup with Oakland. They're super, super bad against the run. They've allowed the third most running yards against to opposing running backs this season. So if there is a week and a spot to grab a punt, this definitely seems like a very good one, but it's not quite the ideal punt running back situation. So, you know, as you're making your lineups, don't just like build it all around him. But if it winds up working out that you want a guy in that price range, I think it's a fine play.
Well, what about a guy like Bilal Powell then with Forte? I mean, Forte says he thinks he can play through a meniscus tear. I mean, I've never had torn my meniscus, so I don't know how badass is that to be able to play through something like that. But it doesn't seem like Forte is going to play this week. Powell was already a pretty decent usage guy in the Jets offense even before he kind of went nuts last week with the Forte injury. Do you see him as safer than Farrow on a cheap scale?
I do, man. It'd be really hard to imagine the Jets just trot Forte out there on a torn meniscus. I mean, you know, stranger things have happened and all, but at this point, I'm assuming that Forte isn't going to play. I guess if we hear word that they're going to split carries or, you know, something like that's going on, I'll temper my enthusiasm. But actually, Bilal Powell, I think he's kind of a much safer version of Farrow in that we've seen that this is kind of the Jets' plan. Like, if Forte's not going to be around, Bilal Powell is just going to be the guy. And so I do like him more. And he also just has a transcendent matchup too. Miami somehow even worse than Oakland against the run, allowing the second most yards to opposing running backs this season. So all those factors taken together, I think both of these guys are kind of the running back punts we've been waiting for all season. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, if we wind up actually getting them if those come to fruition. But as of now, I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, we already like Powell is that he was already kind of featured. They would run him occasionally, you know, maybe 6 to 8 times a game, somewhere in there. But he also is a big part of the passing game. I mean, he's had weeks where 5 catches last week, a 7 catch week, a 4 catch week, a couple, and a string of 6 catch weeks earlier in the season. So when you're already involved in one part of the offense, which is in this case like third down in the passing game, and you were spelling the guy, this is where I do think the Jets lean on him a little more heavily than they maybe would Farrow. I probably feel like he's a little bit safer. I'm with you. I don't think Forte plays. And I think you're going to be either choosing between these two guys or the two top guys in the tier in Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson. I know Johnson's coming off a rough week. Again, I'm willing to toss most of that up into the weather category where they just couldn't get anything going. The footing was terrible. He fumbled the ball a couple times. Do you see these two guys as, like, is there a case to just not even worry about the punt, don't even sweat it, and again, pay, man, $10,000 for David Johnson? That's an insane number. $9,800 for Le'Veon Bell. These are insane numbers, and yet they're still showing up pretty high on a points per dollar value scale just because of what they do. Are these two, should we just go for safety here again?
Well, I think the answer with Bell to me is yes. You know, just because, like last week, 42 touches against the Bills. I don't even know what to say about that. Like, it's almost irresponsible in some ways.
It is irresponsible. It's not almost.
To let a guy be tackled 42 times in a game, like the human body, generally speaking, not designed to withstand punishment like that. And maybe this will be a bigger problem for Bell next season or something. You know, of course, he did get a late start to the season, so who knows. But yeah, I mean, Bell, the thing about the FanDuel or DraftKings algorithms is that they're just not going to know what to do with a guy that touches the ball this frequently out of the backfield. It's just kind of unprecedented. So, and, you know, he's the goal line option. The Steelers still have a ton to play for. So, yeah, I think Bell is incredibly safe. As for Johnson, he's a little bit trickier to me. I mean, I think he's sort of, in some ways, almost like a slightly poor version of Le'Veon Bell. And he's great. That's not an indictment.
Maybe a rich man's version because he's more? I don't always get confused.
No, he's poor in terms of the safety from my perspective.
Oh, gotcha.
I mean, I think we're mixing metaphors a little bit here, but he certainly still gets the touches. I mean, 25 touches last week is not terrible or anything like that. I just don't think that, you know, from week to week, I just think Bell represents a bigger part of the Steelers offense. And I think the Steelers offense is just a little bit better. The thing you like about Johnson this week, of course, is just, again, a terrific matchup with New Orleans. A huge total on the week. So I don't mind either of these guys. I guess, like, I'm saying, a gun to my head, if I couldn't play both, I would just play Le'Veon Bell.
Well, we don't have to put a gun to your head, buddy. Just tell everyone about no halftime, and then I'll put the proverbial, I'll put the DFS version of a gun to your head after you tell everyone about no halftime.
I hope they come and take your guns away, Doug. All this gun talk is making me feel nervous. So no halftime is a terrific app and one of our partners here at DFSR. And what no halftime allows you to do is to offer one-on-one challenges with anyone across the world. And the way these challenges work are, it's basically a one-man daily fantasy draft. You choose a player. You choose a player that you think your guy will be better than. So you might choose David Johnson versus Le'Veon Bell, relevant to this discussion. And then you issue that challenge to the world. If someone takes it, then great. The game is on, and the winner takes all in terms of who has more fantasy prizes. And if no one does, no problem. You just get your money back. You can also surf hundreds of challenges from week to week on No Halftime and see if anyone else has foolishly issued some challenge that you know you can beat. So nohalftime.com, promo code DFSR25, and they'll get you started with a $25 bonus.
Okay, so No Halftime challenge this week I'll throw out to you is, and it's, you know, it's not one of these like sneaky ones, but Le'Veon Bell or David Johnson. If you had to choose, which side of that would you take? Between those two guys,
I'd take Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go against our system. I'm going to take Johnson in this. I think that this is the first time in the history of DFSR that I've gone against the system.
Why are you going against the system? This is my Doug Imper. Why are you going against the system, man? You're going to make everyone think the system's broken.
That's
not exactly like
that
it.
That was really
totally that was actually me. That was James, by the way, saying that, guy's in case you're
totally
having trouble
spot
discerning.
On. Yeah. We spend so much time talking about it. You can just do just an absolute spot on Frank Caliendo impression of me. Okay, so I think my where I'm wondering if our system is a little low on Johnson this week is not fully figured out the overall total maybe here. Bell does have a slightly worse matchup, definitely a worse matchup than against the Bengals. Steelers only projected for 23.5 total points. Like we said before, Cardinals up near 26.75. I actually just think we're a little low on Johnson. Something I'm going to look at when we're off the podcast here, and just to make sure that some of the defensive inputs are totally correct. I mean, it's close for us on DraftKings where, or excuse me, it's close for us on FanDuel where it's not full PPR. Like Bell does Bell gets a significant bump there in turn on DraftKings, where we have him for 29 points and Johnson for 26. So that's about 15% difference. It's a little closer on FanDuel, 26 to 23.5. So I just think, my gut feels better about Johnson. First time in history I've ever gone against the system. Let's move on.
That's true. Well, and I think I'm going to get the final word here before you try to move on me. And that's that I think it just does matter what the teams have to play for. You know, in Arizona at 5-7 and that embarrassing tie against Seattle is just not playing for anything like what the Steelers are playing for. You know, Steelers have a lead division right now, a very good team chasing them in Baltimore. I just think that matters enough to where, like, Le'Veon Bell, if I was like, here's two running backs, one out-touched the other by 18 touches last week, you'd be like, yeah, I don't know. So, yeah, I agree that it's not a better matchup, but I just think, like, if there's one guy, like, and again, if we're going for safety, if there's one guy who's, like, guaranteed to go out there and touch the ball 30 times, I'll take Le'Veon Bell there, and that's what really tips the needle for me.
All right, let's move on to wide receivers, where the decisions aren't so as clear as they are at running back. We have, you know, up near the top of the system here, we have Julio Jones. Now, Julio Jones has not practiced yet this week. There's still days to go here. Did not play last week. It actually seems like the injury might be worse than it was originally reported. Like it was reported, I'm looking at this note, it was reported as turf toe. Now it's a sprained toe. So I guess that's worse. I'm not totally sure. But let's assume that he doesn't play. Okay. If he does play, I think we can, if we know he's 100%, I actually think we can probably pretty safely roster him. The problem is the injury concern now. This is going on a couple weeks now of injury concerns, and I think that is just true question mark territory. After him, where is some safety we can find in wide receiver? This week seems very difficult for me with wide receiver.
Well, I think the first place you'd look if he were not playing would be Taylor Gabriel. Gabriel didn't light the world on fire in terms of just overall target share last week, but was solid enough in a game that, you know, didn't really feature a game script where you would expect him to get a ton of touches and that they were scoring defensive touchdowns and running up the score like the Harlem Globetrotters. So I think that if Gabriel were out there again and Jones were not, he would be a slam dunk inclusion for cash games for me. And I think there are some other relatively cheap guys around there too. You know, Robbie Anderson, Emmanuel Sanders, Golden Tate, guys like that, that, you know, provide a similar package of probably a little bit more usage than they're giving credit for in their current pricing.
Yeah, my one concern with Gabriel, even with Jones, let's assume Jones weren't to play. His numbers for this year, they look great from a fantasy perspective for sure. He has been the beneficiary of some incredibly long touchdowns in the last 4 weeks. He has a 64-yard touchdown, a 76-yard touchdown, and a 35-yard touchdown. He does not figure into their red zone packages. He's actually not even an every down wide receiver for them, even with Sanu and Jones out. Like they ran Aldrick Robinson and Justin Hardy in more sets than they did Gabriel. I just worry that he is running as hot as you can ever run on long touchdowns, and that's boosted his overall performance. And I mean, again, the game got out of hand last week, 6 targets. I don't know. Are you with me on, like, is that a legit concern, the super long touchdown boosting his overall performances so far?
Well, I think so. Absolutely. I mean, you know me, I hate the super long touchdown, and I wish I wouldn't even get points for it sometimes.
Right.
But I do think that it's really hard to draw any conclusions on in terms of how guys were going to be used based on what happened last week, because the game was just such an unusual game that it's hard to really project anything, right? I mean, are you with me on that? That it's just tough to learn lessons from that?
Yeah, no, you're right. It is hard to know. Like 6 targets might have been actually in a close game, might have actually realistically been 10 targets had that game been close. Like I'm 100% with you on that. It's not so much actually the target share. It's just that he looks so great on these the overall fantasy production looks so great on these just super long touchdowns, and that's just my only concern because those can dry up really quick. Like you can just get tackled on those outs,
course,
you know?
And it's terrible.
Right, and so like you can just have like the game before where he got again 6 targets and caught 5 catches for 44 yards, and that was the end of the day. And so anyway, that's my concern. After him, though, I'm with you that I'd play him in cash games though, 100%. If Jones wasn't playing, you know, you mentioned some of these other guys. I think if we're gonna go double expensive at running back with Johnson and Bell, we're going to need to maybe find some cheaper guys. I'm not even sure that even paying up for some of these other wide receivers is totally correct. What do you think about guys like, you know, we wrote up Robbie Anderson, And if you were doing a podcast from the future, or like in the podcast from the past week one, we're like, hey, week 15, Robbie Anderson is going to be one of our top value. I'd be like, what? Like, what happened? But he's a guy. Yeah. Well, actually, I know he's from Temple. If, when he covers college football for a year, you know that, you know, Robbie Anderson's a Temple guy. But do you think the target share for him is a real thing? It's been a quarterback. Like, there's been a definitive thing that's happened with the Jets, and that is they have a new quarterback. And this new quarterback seems very inclined to throw to him. Do you think that he is just sort of supplanted Brandon Marshall as like their possession high target guy?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this from time to time before, but there really is something to when there's a new quarterback and then they start throwing to the guy who is like on their practice squad or whatever. I think that's absolutely a real thing. And I think when it comes to this situation, like double-digit targets in back-to-back weeks, I think it's a real thing. And I don't see any reason to not trust it. And the fact that he's just still dirt cheap really seals the deal for me. It's actually kind of interesting because the presence of a guy like Robbie Anderson, you know, everybody's gut this week when they see these huge running back punts is going to be just to jam them in. But it might just be correct to take your payoffs at running back, since running back, the gains to be had at running back are so outsized right now compared to time in the past, that and the gains at wide receiver are actually less than they have been in the past. It might just be correct to stick with kind of the known punts, as boring as it is to just play the same guys every week. That might actually just wind up being the correct move this week.
Yeah, and that's where the system is actually going right now. After those, it's just sort of just it's gearing towards safety at running back, because we're just getting this almost historical safety from these two guys. I just can't that, and there is something to be really said for that. And I know the price becomes, you're like, oh my God, $10,000 for David Johnson. My goodness. After those guys, and the third guy we had at the last two guys, excuse me, we had at wide receiver were Emmanuel Sanders and Golden Tate. They both fall into this mid 6,000-ish range. Sanders has the matchup against New England. You think they're maybe playing catch up today or this week? Tate gets the Giants. He still saw the same target share. If you had to go sort of between Tate and Sanders, who do you see a little more safety in between those two guys?
Well, I suppose I see it in Sanders. I mean, Tate still has the question mark of Marvin Jones's health. Like, for all we know, Marvin Jones was playing at 75% or something last week versus Sanders, who's had a really secure role in his offense all season long. So it's also tough, though, because obviously the quarterback situation in Denver is so atrocious that who really knows what's going to go on there. But what I really like about Sanders, I think, is the proposed game script here. Generally speaking, Denver is really in the position, they're kind of in the control position where they want to slow the game down and kind of get it over. And if there's any team that can kind of pressure them to make them flip the script and kind of go on the aggressive a little bit more, it would be New England. So I think I like Sanders a little bit more. Actually, in that same conversation is Julian Edelman. I wrote him up, and I think actually he's got a terrible matchup against Denver, and that's not ideal. But the fact that he saw 15 targets last week leads me to believe that he's just the whole Patriots offense right now. And sure, he didn't turn that into a huge performance last week, but against a tough Denver offense, like generally, or a tough Denver defense, generally speaking, what teams try to do in situations like this is just try to shorten up the field, you know, make Brady be in the pocket a little bit less, you know, not expose him to a good pass rush and all that sort of thing. And Edelman is really the outlet for that. So I think we could see huge targets out of him this week, like 15, definitely in play, even more if things break right. So if I'd throw him into that mix, and I would take him over Sanders and Tate.
And then finishing this off with tight end. Again, tight end, we go. I should just like get a drop where I just say the same thing about tight end every week, so I don't have to just figure out a new way to kind of just sum this kind of this position up. Because
let's hear it. You're a broadcast professional, Doug. I want to hear you give it your best take. Go ahead.
Tight end sucks.
Try one more time.
It really sucks.
You got to do a little bit more than that.
We're just in this. It just every single week is the same kind of thing. It's figuring out who these sort of middle tier, lower to middle tier tight ends are that stand to get 6 to 7 targets, and you hope you luck box your way into a touchdown. Like last week we were on a guy like Ertz. Ertz saw a ton of targets. We were also on a guy like Brate, who didn't see as many targets. So I'm willing to pat ourselves on the back for one, but definitely admit the other one too. So, you know, we're back on Brate a little bit this week. You wrote up Kyle Rudolph. What do you see the safety in Rudolph going into week 15?
Yeah, I mean, the safety in Rudolph, as opposed to basically every other tight end of the game, is that you don't have to pay a premium for him, so you like that. I mean, tight end is not a position where you want to pay up this season, basically ever.
Right.
And then the next part is just the target share. I mean, tight ends have been up and down all season long, where Rudolph has averaged 10 targets a week over the last 3 weeks, and maintain that even with Diggs getting healthy. And so, you know, it's pair all that with the combination of the Colts, who have ranked dead last in defending the tight end this year. I think it just seems such a cut above the rest of the plays that it's really hard to imagine throwing anyone else in there for cash games.
Yeah, finally, though, I will say one thing I'm glad about this week is that because of the presence of punts, like we've been, our, the system at times, and this has actually been something that's happened in the DFS community in general, is that there's been just lots of double tight end plays on DraftKings because they're just always underpriced. Like a 6-target to 7-target wide receiver is typically in the 4,500 to a little bit more range on DraftKings, whereas the 6 to 7-target tight end is like in the 3,000 range or, you know, low fours. And so people always say like, well, there's two tight ends again. And I'm like, well, there's just like wide receiver threes on their team. And if these guys were wide, if they just weren't labeled tight ends, they were wide receivers, I don't think you'd have an issue with it. But this week you can actually get away from that just because of the guys like Bilal Powell and Farrow just are cheaper. So that's the one good news on tight end. Otherwise, otherwise there's really just never other any good news. All right. We're going to be back tomorrow discussing all the breaking down every game on this week 15 slate. Tonight, just one quick note, sometimes we'll jump in and say anything about a Thursday game and whether or not it's worth it to grab value on a Thursday game. Tonight it's Seattle minus 16 against the Rams. Just, that's not even, I don't even know if you need to tune in. You'll learn almost nothing from this game, but if you want to just be a masochist and you like to jump in and watch football just for football's sake, otherwise I'm not playing anyone from the Seattle game.
But actually, I think it's worth noting that I think that does open up some opportunity. You know, a lot of times people play the Thursday game specifically to get a sweat. And if you just put together like a safe lineup of guys you know we're going to play this weekend and you just let people play their Thomas Rawls or whoever, I think you can get an edge there.
All right. Stick around here as we're going
to
jump on.
Are you going to ignore me? Are you going to respond to that point?
I'm sorry, buddy. Great point. But actually, I will say that our Thursday lineups this year have been incredibly successful, mostly because they do favor an early week safe approach typically. And that is, there is a lot of value in that. So, buddy, awesome point. I'm really sorry for just trying to move on with that.
That's fine.
Stick around.
I guess I'm over it.
As soon as James is done yelling at me right now, you will get our interview with Andrew Morris, the winner of the DraftKings Million. That's coming up right here. Buddy, I'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Peace.
All right, here's Andrew Morris and I talking about his win this week in the DraftKings Millionaire Contest. All right, DFSR folks, I am here. It's been a big week. I'm here with Andrew Morris, or A. Morris 525, as he's known now probably famously on DraftKings, who this past weekend on Sunday took down the DraftKings Millionaire Maker through his own ingenuity, I would say, a little bit of help from us here at DFSR, but we wanted to get him on the line, talk a little bit about how Sunday was for him and what some things we can learn and take away from just a huge win. Andrew, how's it going, man?
It's going great. Good to be with you. It's been a crazy couple of days, but glad to be talking with you.
I was going to say I can imagine, and then that would be a lie. Like, I can't really imagine, so I don't know if that's like the, I don't know if that's necessarily the correct thing to say. So we wanted to get you on, and I know a lot of our users, we have a chat room up on the site, which I know you've been in before, and we have a chat room on the site. We have users that they wanted to hear your story, and I'm happy to, you know, we'll talk a little bit about Sunday. And I guess for starters, so if for those of you, I'll post in the show notes Andrew's winning lineup. If you played in the DraftKings Millionaire, you can go and see, just scroll up to the top and next to number one, you'll see what the lineup is. Your lineup this week was Cousins at quarterback, Bell and Hill at running backs, Taylor Gabriel, Jarvis Landry, Emmanuel Sanders, Zach Ertz, in the flex, DeSean Jackson, and in the defense, the Patriots. When you went into this week, what was some of your thought process kind of like leading in? For, because I think you said you put in one entry, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so you, knowing you had the one entry, what was some of your process sort of going into, you know, filling out that lineup and feeling comfortable with it?
Yeah, so, well, I'm a Redskins fan. I usually just do the one entry a week. I like to have one or two Redskins on my lineup. And earlier in the week, I had heard Jay Gruden talking about how they weren't really getting DeSean Jackson involved much. You know, they're playing the Eagles. He usually has a big game against them. So I thought for sure they were going to throw at least one or two bombs to him, which they did. So I really wanted to lock in Cousins and Jackson. So that was my thinking there. I have Jeremy Hill on my like normal fantasy team. I just thought he was going to have a big game against the Browns.
Sure.
You know, they're awful. So that was really another one that I really just locked in. And then, you know, what my usual routine is just to log on to your site and check out what the what the optimal lineup is without any locks. So I did that, checked out what it was, then plugged in, you know, the three guys I wanted. And so I think your system really liked Bell, which obviously you had to have to win this week. And then Sanders, Landry, Gabriel, and Ertz. I think your system was liked Ertz and Brate. I really liked Ertz because the Redskins D's awful, especially against tight ends. So I thought that was a fantastic pick, and I actually probably wouldn't have thought of that without the tool. So that was huge. So I really just went with – I locked in Cousins, Hill, and Jackson, and hit the calculate button on your site. And then I can't remember what defense your tool gave me. I don't think it was the Falcons. I don't know. I just looked around to see what the options were with the money I had left. They're playing the Rams. The Rams are really, really bad. I just thought that was a good play. I was a little surprised they were only 4% owned. So that's really what I did. I didn't spend a ton of time doing it. Probably took me 20 to 30 minutes. And I just wanted to let it go. I was in the chat room before the game started, but I think around 12:30, I just said, all right, I'm going with this lineup, and I let the games play out from there.
Yeah, I logged in to chat. It was funny. Rewind. For those that are new to listening to this podcast or our site, Andrew's a premium member, and he basically, you have the option, the way our tool or NFL projections work is you have the option to lock or exclude players you like or don't like, and then basically hit the calculate button and you can have it fill in sort of around the margins for you. So that's what he's talking about there. And we also have a chat room on the site. I had logged into the chat afterwards and I was so mad because I'm usually in there almost like all day on Sunday, and I just had just taken a break during that Giants game, and I logged in the chat and the chat was just going absolutely bananas like about just like the craziness of it. So you logged in the chat, and I guess at like what point did you log in a chat and like really, what point did you like think that you had a realistic chance at sort of winning?
So I guess after the 1 o'clock games, I can't remember. I think I was around the 1,000 mark or something like that. But then like as soon as the 4 o'clock games kicked off, I got the 10 points from the Falcons just sitting there. So I think I was around 100 around then.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Chipotle to get something to eat, looked at my phone. Saw Falcons had a pick six against Goff, and then I jumped up to sixth. I texted my friend. I was like, dude, I'm in sixth place. I can't really believe this. But we both kind of just assumed I'd fall back because that's the way it normally goes.
Sure,
So then I came back home, watching Red Zone, and then Gabriel get the – Matt Ryan throws a bomb to Gabriel. Because he hadn't really done anything yet, so that was absolutely huge. And then the Falcons had a strip six, or they sacked Goff, he fumbled, then they took it back. So that was another touchdown.
Did that put you in first at that point?
Yeah, it was kind of weird because DraftKings actually froze for like 30 minutes.
That's right. So there was like a really long downtime. I forgot about that. There was that really, really long downtime during those 4 o'clock games. I think it was even longer than 30 minutes. Were you just kind of sitting there having no idea about like where you sort of stood?
I thought I had to be in first place, but I was not sure. And then finally it updated like around 7 o'clock, I think, and I was in first. So I was pretty happy to say the least. But it was kind of still stressful because the Niners-Jets game was still going on. Of course, the Jets tied it up the last second and go to overtime for the last couple minutes. And the guy in third had Carlos Hyde. The guy that finished in third had Carlos Hyde. And I think he had like a 25-yard run to start overtime. So he was within like 2 points of me. And then luckily the Niners stalled out and they couldn't stop the Jets, so that was absolutely huge.
That's crazy, too, because, right, he breaks off another run or they can sustain a drive, and he probably catches you. I'm looking at it now. He was 2.6 total points away from you. So, you know, a catch and a run, and that's kind of it. I mean, he doesn't catch a ton of balls. During the Giants-Dallas game, how much were you sort of scrolling down through player minutes remaining through the other folks trying to figure out at that point? Because at this point, you're staring at your projected winnings at $1 million. And you had to be. Did you scroll back and kind of take a look at who still had folks left from that Sunday night game?
Yeah. I went pretty far down. A lot of people had Witten, and the closest one that had Witten was like, I don't know, 20 plus points back. So okay. I thought that was pretty unrealistic. I had to scroll pretty far down to find someone that did not have Witten, and they had Zeke Elliott. They were 28 points back.
Okay.
So, I mean, I was feeling pretty good, but I knew you could have a big game. Somebody else could show up, or maybe somebody had, I don't know, Zeke and Beckham for some reason, and they could have combined and have big games, which they kind of did, but not huge games. So I was feeling pretty good, but knew anything could happen. So as the game went on, I guess the first half I was just, you know, I still didn't really think I was going. I thought something bad was going to happen.
Sure, that's DFS, man. I always think something. The other shoe is about to drop, yeah. Basically.
Exactly. But it was a low scoring game, exactly what I needed. They were pretty much stuck between the 20s, which I absolutely needed. Zeke was, you know, doing all right, but no touchdowns, which was absolutely huge. So after the first half, no one was really near me still. So I was feeling pretty good. And then second half, you know, it was pretty much the same thing. But then Beckham had the long touchdown. Somebody did have Beckham. I think he ended up 14 points behind me, but that was sort of giving me pause because if he had one more long touchdown, I think he probably would have overtaken me. But I guess as the game was winding down, I mean, I was just pacing back and forth the entire like fourth quarter, pretty much just praying that both teams would keep running the ball.
Right.
And clock would end, the clock would run out. And then I was just praying for no overtime pretty much. Because I don't think I could have taken overtime.
Yeah, last drive, we were, I mean, not in the same thing, but like watching him kind of start from that. I think they started from like inside the five on that last drive. And then you're just kind of like, oh my God, more incompletions. Let's just get out of here.
Exactly.
So, I mean, for most people, I would say 99.99% of the people that listen to this podcast or that are on our site, or just really most people just in the world in general, you know, $1 million is a lot of money. And I don't know if this kind of big win, if it changes some of your like future plans, your present plans. Like I think, you know, it's sort of a cliche question to ask, like, oh, what are you going to do with that money? But I think people are also interested in that. So, I mean, what does this kind of do for you in the short term or maybe long term? Does it change anything sort of about what you've been doing up to this point or and how you kind of move going forward?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely want to give some of it to my parents and my sister first. And then the funny thing is I really needed a new car. I actually just bought a new car on Saturday, right before Sunday. I'm probably not going to get a new car, but another new car. But it's absolutely life changing for me. I don't know really what I'm going to spend it on. I'm a pretty young guy, so I'm definitely going to, you know, try and make this last for a long time.
You just kind of gave the perfect answer. I hope everyone listening has the same kind of the answer. Like, spend it on your family, get yourself a way to get yourself from point A to B, and just worry about the rest of it later. Yeah, I think that's man, it was really great to talk to you. Congratulations again. You know, around here, like, we kind of consider the DFSR and the chat, we kind of talk a lot about, we really worked hard to build up a community. And I know that on Sunday night, the first thing I did when I logged in the chat and saw that was I called James and Blake, who are other business partners, and just like, if there was any three other people in the world that felt happy as you, or like sort of in the same way, we were right there with you. We've considered DFSR to be a nice community that we built. And I know the people in the chat were going crazy as if they had wanted to. So, I don't know. It really felt like a cool win for everybody, but especially for you, man. Congratulations. We're all really happy for you.
Yeah. I mean, thanks a lot. I definitely couldn't have done it without you guys. Did want to say one thing to the chat room people. I don't think I've gone back in since Sunday, so I did just want to say thanks for the support. I'll probably try and find my way back in a couple of days. I just really didn't really know what to say, so that's why I haven't shown my face yet.
It's all good, man. We just appreciate you having done it and sharing it with the DFSR, or sharing at least the love of the DFSR family. So congratulations, man. Good luck with that money, and good luck with the rest of the DFS for you going forward.
All right, thanks a lot.